I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room. Boom, 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 boom. Yeah. So you wanna be a rider? Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminished and the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed in the Red Room. We let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want. Welcome to the Red Room.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest. You guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it real, we keep it opinionated, we keep it what, y'all?
2019.
Ooh, we sounded good. Okay. When we putting out the CD.
Like a pin. Okay.
It's two women and two men, and it bounces. It's balance.
There's balance.
Mm-hmm.
There's balance.
Certain
in the
synergy
world.
To that. Yes. Yeah.
It balances. Exactly.
Yes. So y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. On the show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture, but our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, and shit like that. Little disclaimer, Chris Derrick is out, but he'll be back next week.
Ooh, we miss you.
Yeah, wait, yeah. Well, wait. I'll tell y'all later.
Mm? Mm. I know where he is. Yeah, I know.
I don't.
Anyway, so we love you, Chris.
He was talking trash on the text message. He's like, oh, she shows up when I'm not there. And I'm like, hey, I even had a ticket for you to go to the thing, and you were out of town.
You
so
did. That's
you missed
true.
Out.
Mm-hmm. That's true. So if you guys are grown, let's go ahead and get to the show, y'all. We got my girl back in the house. Y'all can
Yay.
Hear. Back again. It is the incredible. Mm-hmm. Round edible.
Hey.
What's up, girl?
We are back.
Lisa Cole.
Hey, Jan. It's good to be back, everybody. Mm-hmm. Life is kind of getting back to its equilibrium, so I'm ready to come back into the world from self-imposed exile, which I needed. Sometimes as a creative person, you need to take that time, do it family and all that stuff, too. Mm-hmm. But thank God, like last... This Friday was the first time in a long time since I've been out with a lot of people. So I felt really energized being back with everybody. Mm-hmm. So that's always
that's
awesome.
What's that? And then we got my girl in the house, Linnell White, y'all, writer,
Hello.
Director, producer.
Linnell.
We're skipping the record.
That was the mixing.
I was about to, you know, put the needle on the record. Put the needle on the record. And the drum beat goes like this. Let me start to get you now. What's up, Linnell?
I'm good. Well, I'm not good. Okay, let me just. No, I'm not good.
Say it.
So this has been a hard week for me. I had migraines coming at me really hard, and I never get headaches.
Do you think it's the weather?
Migraines. I think it's like I've changed my diet somewhat, and I think a lot of parts of my body are recovering, and so that's put me through a little bit of suffering now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But that's okay.
So you take it out the sugar and all that.
Exactly.
So your body's
I have changed to a more plant based diet.
Oh, that's meat. No. Yeah. That makes sense.
And that's now normal. I'm having like
it's normal.
Just like headaches and just like weird stuff happening. But the scale is moving in the right direction, I'm feeling better.
Good.
Nice.
But you know, but it's been a hard week because then I'm having these migraines, so that means I can't really sit at the computer and focus and write and get the
You're
stuff done.
You're light sensitive,
that I
wanna get. Right.
Yeah, and then I can't really do my workouts. You know, because my head's when your head doesn't function, it's like I'm useless, and I don't like feeling useless.
Mm-hmm.
And then James Ingram died.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This week, and I took that kind of hard because that's the era of R&B that is now lost.
Right.
That era of R&B where it's like, I could just flat out sing. I'm just going to stand on a stage in a suit and captivate
and move your
just
ass.
With my voice.
Right. Just my voice.
Yeah. No auto-tune,
backup dancers.
No dancing. Dancers. Stage effects to hide the fact that I really can't sing that well.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Just straight up stand there, hit the marks on the stage and sing.
Right.
And I feel like
Jasani's like, what's that?
I just feel like I also feel
stop
like
reading my face.
There's a generation who doesn't
millennial.
Well, there's a generation who doesn't know who James Ingram is.
Right.
And what dawned on me, sadly, you know, as I was making food for my plant-based diet in the kitchen was I used to know my parents' generation's music because we'd ride in the car and they would play their music. They didn't play my music. They played.
And you couldn't play yours.
No.
You had to hear theirs.
You had to hear theirs. Right. So it was the Temptations. It was Motown.
Right.
It was the Four Tops.
But you had a music history because your family was playing it. So you had a respect.
But now, these kids now, what's going on?
They control the radio.
Mm-hmm. Or if they can't control the radio, they put the earbuds in.
Right.
And I'm going to just listen to my thing.
Right.
So it's like, so now these kids don't know who.
Yeah, we didn't have earbuds, bitch.
No, none of that. That's I was right. in the back of my mom's 78 Caddy.
Speak it.
And mm-hmm. it was just 8-track cassettes yeah. of their music yeah. that right. they grew up to. And I'm glad mm-hmm. I got to hear because
she was right. rolling on dubs. You know,
yeah. yeah. So, yeah. so, like, you know the music of Aretha Franklin. So mm-hmm. when she passes, you're not sitting like, oh.
Right.
I had some chick roll through my Twitter feed. She was like, who is George Michael?
What?
I'm like,
see, at least I know parenting. That. That's bad parenting.
That's really bad.
That's bad parenting.
I agree.
And I think that's indicative of the type of music that we're getting right now. I think we were talking about this a couple of months ago. It's like you can tell singers who, one, didn't come from the church.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have that experience of listening to your parents' music and having the, because I remember, like, we did. We listened to Motown. We listened to the 60s mm-hmm. music. We had Stevie Wonder. Mm-hmm. We had our stuff, Michael Jackson, all that stuff, right. and the hip-hop later.
Right.
But we always had that music, and so we have a respect for that. And that's why a lot of times when we see, like, these black music shows,
right.
and they bring our elders on to perform, and you see the young people in the audience, like, who's this? Blah, blah. Right. Or I see the Twitter feed, like, why they got these old people? And I realize, you know
Can
what?
Can you believe that?
You have bad parents. Bad parents.
I see that all
bad
the time.
Parents.
No, I am no, no.
That's bad parenting.
No. Let me give you an example. You just said something interesting.
Yes.
So I remember a couple of years ago, I was working on that show with Guy Nicolucci,
mm-hmm.
and we were here in the writer's room. We were having it here before we moved to the studio we're at. And I said something about, it was like I was pitching something. I said, like John Lennon. And I turned to this photo here of John Lennon.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, in the Beatles, when they did such and mm-hmm. such. And I looked at this kid, this little 22-year-old kid, and he looked at me with like, what are you talking about?
Wow.
And I looked and I said, the Beatles. He goes, you know, I don't think I know any of the songs from the Beatles. And then one of the other kids, we had a bunch of kids in the room besides us, and he said, you know, I think I know like one song maybe. And I got up, I said, guy, I'll be right back. And I took a walk around the entire lot to calm down.
Oh, really?
I was so upset. So I came back and sat down and I drilled their asses. So I was like, look, you guys all have homework.
Yep.
I swear to God.
Good for you.
Just start with Beatles 1.
Good for you.
It's all their number one hits. Yes. If you don't like that, you ain't going to like nothing anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So just start there. So they came back the next day and they're like, wow, that's a, oh my God, that I remember that one song I heard it sounds, I've heard that before. I was like, see, bitch, you need to do your research.
Yeah. And the thing with James Ingram, even if you don't know his name, I should be able to put on a record or a song by him, and you know that song.
Right.
Yes.
You should be able to know the song.
You should.
I probably would.
Patty Austin.
Everything I had with Quincy Jones was just ridiculous.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I have good parents, so I'm not in that category. I know my parents into a lot of 80s, and I think it is the 70s, but I'm one of the people also, I don't know the name of artist, right. so I'll know.
But you'll
recognize
the song.
I can sing the song.
Yeah, right.
But like, I want to know, like Aretha Franklin when she died.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, do I know any Aretha Franklin? And then I realized I did. So I was like, okay, I feel better.
I had one of my staff members at my job because at my job every Friday we have a line dance for our students. Mm-hmm. So basically, we play a bunch of music. And so, you know, some of the staff are like, we're going to update some of our music. I said, sure, give me some stuff as long as it's appropriate for sixth graders.
Right.
So one of my staff came up their phone. They're like, oh my God, have you heard this song before? And it's by Heatwave.
No. Oh,
and I was like,
okay.
Yes, I've heard that song.
Wow.
Your stuff is awesome. And I'm like,
wow.
Yeah, yeah.
You're so pretty.
Well, you're so young.
There's no excuse like, to me because Amazon Music and I know Pandora, they all
Spotify,
have
all of that.
70s R&B stations, 80s R&B stations. Turn that on every once in a while and know what came before.
I mean, you're already sampling it in your music anyway. You might as well go back and see what the original is.
See what it is. See what it is.
Anyway.
I agree.
But I'm very concerned because it seems like because we don't have that riding in the car situation the way we used to have, that you're not getting exposed to you. But so it reminded me of the Us trailer.
Mm-hmm.
So what's going on in that trailer is the dad is like, you know, this was my jam.
It's exactly.
This was my jam.
That's right. That's
and
right.
I need y'all to hear this. Mm-hmm. And they're like,
I got five on.
They're like, which I appreciate. I appreciate that part of the trailer. I was like, okay, that's a black dad doing a good thing.
They got bars.
Mm-hmm.
They ain't mumble rapping bitches. Okay,
I understand
they
what you are saying.
They got bars in there. They
I understand
are rapping.
What you're saying.
Okay, look, don't let me get to you.
All right. Well, you can kind of jump from that for music, the same thing in terms
Let me just introduce Jasani Drew.
Go ahead.
Young baby writer.
I'm sorry, young baby writer.
Young
baby writer sitting with us.
Birdman House.
What's happening?
Okay, anyway, go ahead, Lisa.
No, I was just going to say that, and that, to piggyback off of that, that's the same thing in terms of film, your film history. Yep. Mm-hmm. For example, Friday night, Linnell and I went to the Horror Noir screening from Shudder TV at the Egyptian Theater. And
Packed house, which I was sold out.
I came to the red carpet because I was the moderator for the horror panel afterwards.
Like that. Okay.
Hey,
you deserve
it. Look, I've got I got a phone call from a text message.
You should be hosting the red carpet
from Tanana Reeve.
The panel.
Yes, I mean, like, Tanana Reeve was just like, "Hey, girl, do you want to come in and do a horror panel thing? Anything with horror and black people?" Right. She didn't even have to ask me. All she had to say is what time, where, and then she said, "Oh, by the way, Tony Todd is going to be there." And after she said that, I got a little nervous, but I thought, okay, it's just going to be Tony, Tanana Reeve. It'll be Ashley Blackwell. Shout out to Ashley. She just left today to go back home. She's one of the executive producers of the documentary with Tanana Reeve, and she's also the creator of Graveyard Shift Sisters. So those of you who know the Black Girl Horror stuff on Twitter, that's Ashley Blackwell. But basically, I thought, okay, it's Ashley. It'll be director Xavier Bergen, brand new, young director, 28 years old. This is his first feature film. And I thought, okay, that's great. That's a nice little milieu, and we'll get up there. And we'll do. And then, like, every 2 days, I got another one. Oh, guess what? Keith Dave is coming. Oh, guess what? We got Ken Foree. Right. Oh, guess what? We got William Crane, the director of Black. Oh, guess what? We got, you know, and it's just, oh, we got Rachel True. So it's like nine some odd people up there.
It was a big panel.
It was a big panel.
A huge panel.
And part of the, and so at that, after that, I was like, got a little nervous. And this is what happens when you have that support. You always got to have your support people, because Tanana Reeve texted me and said, "Hey, do you want to talk on Wednesday?" And I said, "Sure," because we had like a week. And then like Wednesday, this past Wednesday, we had a little conversation. I said, "Look," she goes, "I'm a little nervous." I said, "Well, I'm a little nervous too, because it's such a big, huge panel." And she was like, "I don't know how you're going to do it." And I said, "Well, we'll just have to, I'll figure out something." And so we just had a little pep talk.
It ain't your first rodeo, but
no,
still.
No, it's not.
This is where it gets tricky. It's one thing when you're moderating a panel and it's about a topic you love.
Specific, sure.
It's a totally different one when you're a fangirl, when those are your heroes. So it's kind of like whoever person is your hero, that, and it's not just one of your hero, it's like, four of them, you know, all at the same time, who they have impacted your life. Like, literally, I couldn't even sit down when I did the moderation. Like,
they stood the whole time.
I couldn't, because
I had left and gone to, we'll get to the documentary. So they aired the documentary, which is 90 minutes. And then, like, my bladder.
What's the documentary about?
It's about black people in horror, the history of black people in horror.
It goes all the way back to, like, Birth of a Nation. That is, like, a horror film. So they really went into the archives with the film. Someone did a lot of research, and I'm suspecting the Ashley from Graveyard Sisters really was the brains behind the documentary
is based on the book by Robin Means Coleman, who's an academic, and she wrote the book called Horror Noir, The History of Black People, and that is the basis of the documentary. So very heavily, thoroughly researched.
So they had great clips from the cinema throughout the decades, but then they also had interviews with your Keith David, with Tony Todd,
they had Jordan
with
Peele
Rachel
in it.
True, who I thought was fantastic in the documentary. So it was really well done, high production. It looks like they shot it at the Downtown Independent in that space. Really, you know, just a really well done film to find out that that was that kid's first feature film. I was like, well, this is good craft. You're on solid ground here.
Shout out to Xavier.
That's good. I know you picky. So
and what did you say? You went to the bathroom and then went now? You left and came back?
So I came back and everyone's up, because I knew it was going to take a while to wrangle 9-10 people to sit up there on the stage. So I came back and you were doing the intros and I'm seeing Lisa standing. I'm like, why is she standing?
Nervous
because
energy.
After we saw the documentary,
I thought it was because in order for you to see down this huge line of chairs, I was like, oh, she's trying to stand so she could see. That's what I thought, and I didn't think
part of it too, because literally once I got done because I'd seen the documentary already, they sent me the link, so I saw it like the week before, because I wanted to like jot down some things and have some ideas and see, you know, what it was. So
you were taking notes as we were watching it that night.
I had my journal with me, so I was like writing things down, things that I had saw the second time, like, oh, maybe I should think about that. And my first thought was like, I had like 10 questions. I said, just throw your questions away. Just jump in there.
That's exactly what I do.
It's like, I had them out just
in case. I just let my instincts go.
No, I write them down ahead of time just in case, because you never know how your panel's going to be. Some of them are like, one answer Nancy's like, yes, no. And it's like pulling teeth. So I said, let me have a set of 10, but let me just go how I'm feeling when I see the doc and get up there. But when the documentary is done, of course, I'm sitting there with Linnell and Jeff Thorne. They were like my guests that came. And I would have had you guys come.
Shout out to Jeff.
Yeah, but it was like, we're sitting there. And I got so comfortable that when the things came up, I was like, wow, that was so good. And I was like feeling the vibe because they had us in the little special section with everybody. And then Linnell's like, hey, and she's supposed to be getting up doing the
I'm comfortable.
Talking about, hey, this is something. And
the credits are rolling. At least it's sitting there. I'm like, you need to get your ass up. Get down there, moderate the panel. Like, I'm like, what are you doing right here?
So comfortable.
Go.
But it was so weird because I looked at Tanana even. She's getting up. And I thought they would, like, do our intros and then have us come up. But it was like the lights came up. Mm-hmm. They had all these 9 chairs and mics set up. And me and Tanana would be like, are they going to introduce us? Or do we introduce? So we're just kind of walking up there. And I'm like, hey. So it was like that weird, like, oh, Jesus, here we go.
Regardless, though, your ass needed to be up there.
Yes, I did need to be up there.
No matter who's doing the intros or what the, what the logistics is, your ass needed to be up there.
So when I got up there, it's like once everybody sat and then I looked at them, like literally my legs were shaking. Like I was going to sit. And it's like, no, because if I sit there, it's going to be obvious my legs are shaking. Yeah. So what I had to do was, all right, I need you to stop. And literally what I did within the 10 seconds I got up there, it's like, just pretend like this is the fan reunion. And these are your uncles and your auntie, your cousin, like Rachel Chu, you know, we're close. And I said, Rachel Chu is like your cousin, you know, Keith David, Ken Forey, Tony Todd. Those are your uncles. You ain't seen them in a long time. You're happy to see them. Relax into that, but you need to stand up so that keep your energy up and you need to look at them.
Yeah.
And so basically that's why I stood the whole time. That way I could like get that nervous energy. You can't see my legs shaking. And then I can look at them. And once they started talking, we got it. I didn't have to do anything else.
Because eventually you sat because the picture I saw you were sitting.
No, you're standing the whole time. Yeah,
oh,
she's standing behind.
It looks like you're sitting in a chair and everybody.
I have my hand on a chair, maybe. Yeah, and I'm standing next to her. They probably have to waist up with my chair.
Oh, that's what it is.
But it's like, and a couple times I leaned, I was like, okay. And then once you hear their voice, I'm like, oh God, Lisa, hold, get it together. There are hundreds of people in here. You can't pass out and throw up. And literally, after we eased into it, it's like, okay. And then once they started talking, because that's, like I said, that's your fear as a moderator, is they won't talk or they'll be like, what's next? And once they, I didn't have to do anything else. Just go through, lob a couple of things. What do you guys think? And then they didn't even give me the time. So that's when I had to stop in the middle of them. Like, so if anybody from Shudder TV wants to give me warning how much my time is.
Yeah, control it.
Because once I looked at the audience, and part of it is you have to involve the audience. That's why I asked how many artists, filmmakers.
Here's the other thing. Let me just say about the crowd. No, I have been to enough of these screenings or whatever where the Q&A rolls up and people are like, okay, my evening's over. I'm out. Everybody stayed for the Q&A.
Really?
Everybody, it's not me because I run a bathroom. But you know, other than that, like everybody stayed in their seats glued, like ready for the Q&A.
Right.
The other thing was like you had a personal connection or story for everyone on that panel.
Oh, good.
Like she had a little like thing with Tony Todd, like someone back in the day, you
Versailles, we were at the Cuban restaurant,
had seen him and you freaked and you didn't have the courage to talk to him. So that I think that put all of them kind of, you know, okay, she's not just some random person they found to ask questions. Right. She understands our business and what we do.
Right. And it's significant. And each one of them has a story. And like literally, I had met Tony Todd. I didn't count it as meeting because standing next to somebody is not really meeting them. And then my other personal connection was Keith David because I sold him some books at the Black Bookstore in San Diego. He was doing a play.
And you told that
story. And I just basically said, yeah. And I asked you about the thing. And basically he told me that story. Like it's whoever you want to win, who at the end. I said it was you.
But then Lisa decides to turn to the crowd and say, Candyman. And the tension ratchets up to a level where people are like, girl, stop. Girl, don't do it.
All you heard is no. And people are like, no, I'm thinking, oh, they're joking. But like I said, it wasn't until I watched somebody through a clip, I guess somebody videotaped it and through a clip that I could see from the audience perspective and I could hear the no's that I realized some people were really freaking scared. Because when I'm on stage, I'm just joking. I think they're just saying, oh, no, to be funny. And I'm just saying, because I'm not going to say it 5 times. But it was like, hey, because the question was, I had brought up the Jordan Peele remake of Candyman. And I knew I had read some things about Tony Todd having some mixed feelings about it. And it was one of those things where I really didn't get a chance to go up to him and say,
is he involved in it?
Here's the thing. I think he would like to be involved with it in any capacity. And I think on their part, it would be smart because he's such an iconic figure. And that's part of what I wanted to ask the audience, because it was like, you know, how many of you guys heard about doing the remake and how many of you found it acceptable? Because my first thought was no.
Right.
But because it's going to be a Black woman directing it and Jordan Peele's production company is producing it, I'd be curious to see what Black people's voice about this whole, because, you know, Candyman is problematic. It's got some issues with it. I love problematic things.
And that's also addressed in the documentary as well. Yes. The documentary was very I want to say even-handed and fair in terms of looking at like, yeah, this is good. We got a black male lead is like in a horror movie.
The first Urban Legend.
There's some problems with him and his sort of lust after this white woman. Right,
and killing all the black people when the white people who did you wrong are in the building right across the tracks.
White people
like, did you lose your map or do you need some assistance getting across the tracks?
Yeah. So I was saying white people wrote this, right? Candyman?
Yes, I don't know. Based on a Clive Barker short story called The Forbidden.
That's right.
And in The Forbidden, basically, it was like a class. It was like a white woman and her baby. It's like a class apartment. So it had all the tropes of an urban legend that takes place in England. Mm-hmm. But when they brought it to America, they blackified it by making it about gentrification, making it about black trauma and black pain. And then, of course, they brought in some of the tropes that have always been problematic. The big black monster, the lusting after the white woman, the sacrificing your own black people and killing them, but not after going after the source of that's causing it. But one of the things that me and Tanana Rivet talked about, because she says, like, you know, I think our fear was, and that's why when I opened up the thing, I want to say we're going to create a reverential space, because I knew there's some problematic things with some of the things in Blackula, the things that are in Candyman,
which we watched
the things are in Dawn of the Dead.
We watched Blackula afterwards. After the Q&A.
Woo! And the homophobia in that is unreal.
I don't remember.
And
I
the colorism.
There's some colorism in there. And the homophobia.
And the chicks who really don't do much, but just sort of like... Okay.
The sexism.
I'm going to run away with you, Blackula.
What's the homophobia now? I don't know.
They say faggot like, what, six, 7 times?
What? Yeah. I mean, because it starts with...
And apologies to anyone who were offended by the use of the word fat. I'm just letting y'all know. We know we're unfiltered. I'm just telling you how it is.
It kind of caught
me out
of nowhere.
Jeff and all of us, every time that word came up in the movie, we were just like, oh, damn.
And I did see a couple people walk out.
Right.
I was like, oh, and fair enough.
Right.
Like, if you don't want to deal with it, you don't need to deal with it.
Right.
Yeah. So Blackula, to me, because I'd never seen it before. Mm-hmm. It's before my time, all right? It goes right in right away. The movie starts. We're in Transylvania, Dracula's castle, and then the gentleman, I can't remember his real name.
William Marshall.
But the character's
Mama Wade.
Yeah, right.
Mama Wade.
So he comes in with his wife.
Right.
She's got her tribal, apparel on, accessories, and they sit at the table, and the white guy basically, Dracula basically is like, you know, attacks them and shoves...
Mama Wade
in a coffin, right? They don't. But this is in the first 7 minutes of the film.
Yeah. Like, and names it. You are Blackula, so I'm tobifying you. I'm turning you into Toby.
After Dracula tries to also just like leer at his woman, like right in front of him, like yes, and I'd like to dabble in some of this here. Like whoa, bro, back off. That's my chick.
Right.
Yeah. So it goes right in right away. And then the people who find the coffin are these two gay men and they come and buy the estate. Mm-hmm. They come and buy Dracula's estate after he's
gone. They're like antique collectors and they buy,
So they buy the coffin and they are the first ones referred to by the F word.
Right.
You know, and it's just really, it's unfortunate. I'm not going to even attempt to justify it.
Right.
It kind of I wasn't ready for it.
And the humor that they were using against those two gay characters was because they were very femme. Mm-hmm. And it's in the 70s. And I remember as a child, you know, when that 72, I was 4 and I remember that. But that's the language that people said.
It came out in 72?
Came out in 72. I was 4 when it came out. And it was like... Damn. You heard that, and I remember people said that a long time ago, and it's like, you hear it like, oh, that's not nice. When I was a kid, like, that's not nice, that's not cool. But to hear it so many years later as an adult, and it's so jarring.
Well, and you hear from a variety of sources. You hear from the
cops.
The cops are throwing it around, kind of like, well, who cares about a couple of, you know, like, antique, whatever, F-words. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if the women were using it too. It was just problematic. Mm-hmm. It was really problematic.
Right. And so going in, knowing that's why I had to like set a tone, like here's the context, and I had to use that quote that I read from Women.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yes.
Does it still stand as far as being scary?
As far as
to my images of Blackula.
It's camp.
Freak.
Listen.
Really?
It's 70s. Now
I was like 3. Okay.
In the 70s, for it to be low budget and for what it was, and I remember as a child, there was some frightening imagery. But now when you look back on it, you know, it looks camp. But I have to look at it in the context of the
70s.
They
should redo it.
I think so too. That was the question I wanted to ask him. Like, update. What? We had more time and they didn't have 20,000 people up there on the panel.
The director was there?
He was there, William Crane.
Yes. Yes.
He directed that and he was 23 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. So imagine 1972, 23 and you're directing that. And of course, you know, he tried to do some changes, and with William Marshall, you know, pushing back on some of the imagery of, because it was supposed to, it's called, the original title was what, Anthony Brown's in Town? Or Tony, really? Anthony Brown's in Town. I said, we can't call it that. Yeah. We got to call it something else, and we're calling it Blackula, you know. So the problematic stuff, a lot of it, I attribute to being, you know, a young director.
The 70s. The script. It needs some work.
Yeah.
It needs some work.
And I wanted to ask him that. Like, I was going to ask him, you know, hey, so you're being offered to remake it. What are some things you would change? You know, or, and I was going to ask that question to Xavier, too. Like, hey, if you were offered to remake it, what are some things you would add? What are some things you would keep? But, of course, when you got 90,000 people up there, you can't.
You do what you could.
So, you know, you do the best, and you just try to frame questions that can kind of participate. And I do, in all of my panels that I tend to moderate, I do something like I really like to know, which is basically let the panel talk to each other, where I just said, if there's anything you're dying to ask anybody else on
that
the panel.
That was a good...
And basically, Rachel True and all, they were like, so, David Keith, in The Thing, and blah, 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 and David... hurt everybody's feelings who's had this theory on who MacReady or Child. And he went through and was talking about the smoke from his breath and the snow. And people were saying that that's because you're not the human one. And what's his name is MacReady's breath. So he basically said, and I'm assuming he's saying he's the one. He was not the thing. And that he survived at the end.
Yeah,
and
I believe that too.
He was the one. The brother lived. Yeah. You know, and it was just them talking. And of course, Ken Foray talking about writing and, you know, things and just getting the story out.
There was a point in the panel where they distinctly were like, the script. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a solid script, you're going to build your house on a shoddy foundation.
Right.
Like, don't do it.
It always comes
to
that.
So I appreciate that.
Right. And that the question I'd ask him with that, because all three of them, they always work with indie people. Like, they get commercial fare, but they're one of those few that, well, it doesn't even matter how low budget it is. If they believe in a product, they will come and act in it. And if you look at their whole resume, there's a lot of indie and young directors, newbies, that they are willing to work with. Some actors won't do that. Because money, they want money, but they're about giving back, and they remember what it was like, and they're really about mentoring new people. And so that's why I wanted to give them the opportunity for the filmmakers out there. Like, hey, what are some advice? And people, if you're listening to this, these are actors that have like 30 or 40 years of acting and directing and producing, and they're basically telling you it's the story, it's the script. That's got to be the first thing that's got to be popping. So it was good to hear from them, you know. And your sound has got to be good.
If you're going to shoot it on an iPhone, make sure the sound is tight.
So it was a really thrilling night to be there and to see your elders and to give them their due, because one of the two people I mentioned that were always in horror movies that I loved who were no longer here are Bernie Casey and Rosalind Cash. And so it's like, it's good for them to still be here and let black people in particular, let them know that, hey, you're still love, you're the foundation, but now we're going to have to lift this thing forward. So among you guys, one of the questions I had wanted to ask them that didn't get a chance to, but I'm asked it you guys, because Get Out, and I know everybody has mixed feelings and all kinds of things about Get Out, and I was really surprised that Jordan Peele said that in the documentary. He said, basically, you know, I made it for everybody to see it, but in particular black people, and if black people wasn't down for it, for him, it would be considered a failure.
Wow.
He said that in the documentary. He says, and I think in his mind, like, it didn't even matter if it became a huge success. Right. If black people...
Because he had $4 million to make this thing.
Yeah.
And he wasn't really thinking, like, let me have a...
And you know what that reminded me of? That reminded me of, like, Toni Morrison. Because Toni Morrison, like, look, I write for black people. I'm writing black stuff. Hey, it's great if white people want to read my stuff, but I am in the venue of writing for my people.
Well, and I also feel like Ryan Coogler did the same thing with Black Panther.
Oh,
he was like, I'm making this for a black audience. If other people come, great, but this is for the
people.
This is the audience I'm seeking. Whereas you could look at something like Green Book, where clearly they were making this for a white audience.
It's like The Help, basically.
Clearly.
It's what is it? What do we call it? It's like the cheap book. What do you call those books we used to get in college? Like the where you didn't feel like reading the book?
Cliff notes.
So it's like Cliff Notes for white people for civil rights history.
High school.
High school Cliff Notes. It really is. Like The Help and all of those movies, which is interesting because I see Green Book in that same vein. Yeah.
I totally see where you're going. It's
funny because you have the script of Green Book right here on your desk right here that I saw. And I've kind of flipped through it and I'm like, the character I would have been going to go see who I thought was going to be the main
Don
character.
Shirley.
You pitched an amazing story.
Doesn't show up until like 15, 20 minutes into the script. And I'm like,
it's not his story.
And it's not his story.
It's not about him.
And you call it Green Book, which is about black people.
It's not about Green Book.
So.
Well, let me go one step further because I had a run-in with an exec from Participant Media who was distributing Green Book.
Okay.
this week, which added to my migraines.
It added to your pain?
So I was at an event and there was an exec, and in fairness, she works in sales. Okay. So she's not working on the development creative side. Mm-hmm. But when asked about the controversy about Green Book, she referred to it as distractions. These distractions. Yeah, thank you. You're pulling away from the microphone. And that was my reaction to, like, oh, no, you didn't. So distractions during award season. And we're just trying to focus on. And then a slide came up of Box Office Mojo and how that movie is picking up steam. It came out 11 weeks ago.
And it had no audience.
But since these controversies have been jumping off, now it's
once again black people helping you make money.
I was wondering if it was even since when it's Mahershala won.
It is now. That helps too. Right. But then also, you know, the controversies, him winning, and now it's like the fourth or fifth movie at the box office. So it is like risen, which is unheard of normally. Like at week 11, you're at the dollar theater if you're lucky. Well, distractions. And I was like, well, that's a problem because participant media to me always comes off portraying themselves as an impact based company. Like we're trying to make films that are like RGB, that make an impact, change hearts and minds, whatever. But you're really only trying to impact white audiences with this Green Book movie. Because if you're telling me these are distractions, then you don't care about what the black audience is saying to you about the title. Mm-hmm.
Which is our history.
About how you didn't consult with the Shirley family and about how Don Shirley probably should have been your movie. He's the more interesting person, but you want to have someone take someone who's a hardcore racist and have this little arc of him. He's not so bad anymore. And let's sit around the table with his hands.
It's still going through the whole paradigm.
He invites him in.
But it's still the whole paradigm that Hollywood has, which is obsolete, is that we got to have a white lead to tell everybody's story. That if white people aren't the lead, no one's going to come see it. Who, for God forbid, someone would come see a Dr. Shirley movie with a black character?
That's what
I thought the movie. Right. Listen, they doing these fire trailers for all these movies because that's what I thought.
I watched both of them.
Listen, the fire documentaries. Listen, I saw both. I saw that, you know, Mahershala. I'm like, oh my God, we get Mahershala. Oh, and we get Viggo as a little sidekick, like the story of the driver. Yeah. We're going to get fabulous suits. Mm-hmm. We're going to get erudite
music.
We're
going to
see
music.
Yeah. We're going to
see a man perform classical music.
The trailers
on
focused
film.
On Mahershala.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a trailer.
We got bamboozled.
Yeah,
everybody.
We got hoodwinked.
But I'll tell you, we did get bamboozled. I tell you who didn't get bamboozled.
Plymouth Rock.
Who didn't get bamboozled are the white suburbanites in Iowa or Ohio or Nebraska who are like, oh, this seems like a nice little movie. Let's go out and see what this is. Green Book.
Let's see Tony Lip.
I don't know.
The Tony Lip story is what it really is.
I love Viggo Mortensen. I think he's just so handsome.
Right. Yeah.
You with these voices crack me up.
The realness. But yeah, it's irritating. But here's what I have to be very careful with, because I think Mahershala, and it's the same with Viola Davis, because I know if you saw the article where Viola said she regrets doing The Help, or she regrets how The Help was formed.
Yeah,
and if you saw when they won, Green Book won the Golden Globes, and when Mahershala was on stage, like his demeanor, like his body language was like, yeah, I'm glad that we won and got but it's like he knew, because he had already apologized to the Shirley family because he didn't know the stuff that grows around it.
Yeah. He wasn't up there in honor. Like,
no.
This is a good thing.
And it's like, we can.
And you know who else was looking a little bit like hiding in the background? Octavia Spencer.
Yes.
She was one of the producers. I found out they brought on later to sort of be like, a black person in the producer.
They needed
realm.
A producer. They needed somebody. Yeah.
They needed a face so they can put her as the target and throw her up front and take all the shrapnel that was flying their way.
Yeah, exactly. How could you do this, Octavia?
Yes.
We ain't looking at her.
Right.
I'm not looking at her. I know how that game
is. I'm not looking at Mahershala because he's going to perform and do his work and his craft. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he even went out his way and realized, once he realized what the whole rigmarole was, went to the family, made his amends with the family and stuff like that. So the issue is not with them. It's with the producers behind it. And I don't know if you guys saw it when they had the director's panel and they had, is it Peter Farrelly who was and Spike Lee was on
the
stage.
Hollywood Reporter,
was that what it was?
Director's panel.
And he was talking about, Peter Farrelly was talking about how he had to stop for 45 minutes and explain to the black actors in the scene why Viggo Mortensen's character was doing something. And if you could see the expression on Spike Lee's face, like the whole time Peter Farrelly's talking, Spike Lee's just sitting there looking straight ahead like this some bullshit.
Well, I'll do you one better. I'm sorry. I'll do you one better. The Hollywood Reporter always does their yearly round tables, and they do one with directors, they do one with actors. They did one with Viggo Mortensen, Chadwick Boseman, Mahershala Ali, and if you could see the side eye that Chadwick Boseman,
Chadwick is the king of side
Viggo
eye.
Viggo Mortensen, it'll Chadwick. Kill your soul.
Chadwick
it was
is
just like
keep going.
You on some shit right now,
right,
Viggo?
Right. Right. Wait, you have secret text we can't see.
That was last night at the DGA. Just pass that to
So here's the thing. We're going to have to get past. Hold on.
Oh,
that was last night.
Yeah.
I believe it. I believe it. Right. Because the expression, and I think what happens now is in the old days, black people would just sit there
and take it.
And take it. Black people ain't taking it no more.
We're done.
And so that brings me to the thing that I wanted to ask all of you, which is basically, and it brings me up to the show that you watched last night, other night.
Oh, I didn't watch the entire episode.
Which is
I got
Emperor Bruja, Always a Witch on Netflix.
I didn't get it. I only made it through half.
That we continue doing, and it's the thing that got Amaa Asante dragged on the timeline.
Right. What? Oh, the recent movie she did. Okay.
And basically is we are tired of seeing oppressors being humanized over the people they are oppressing when the stories that should be told and that we want to see are from the marginalized and oppressed. Right. But what seems to be happening, Hollywood thinks, oh, this is a great thing. We can talk about how we're all humans and how we can all just get along, but we're going to elevate these racist characters at the expense of the actors. And you're putting our actors who want to work. I ain't got no mad somebody trying to make that check.
Right.
But what are you doing in this climate right now? Like what? That's not your audience. Right now, the people who are bringing your money are black and brown people, people who are not white. Who are going to see these movies,
we'll go to the movies
who
more.
Give you free publicity and make things happen before your shit even comes out. So for you to ignore that is ridiculous.
And to label it as a distraction.
To give you an example.
I found offensive.
Yes. And, oh, God, that burns me up. I can do some curse words. So here's how I got bamboozled, y'all. So last year, we all got excited. You know, and anything with black women and black girl magic that has us as a center of the story and a supernatural story. Yeah. So we got word that in Colombia, beautiful Colombia, that there was going to be a story about a beautiful black woman who's a witch, who was burned as a witch, and she's coming to the future, and she's going to use her supernatural powers to go back to the past, and she's going to go rescue her love. Yes. And I thought, and this is what I thought, see, some beautiful, gorgeous black man, and they were in love. It's like a Toni Morrison love. It's like the 30-mile woman and 6-0. And they were together, and they were torn away together. And she's going to come back and rescue her love and her family and use her powers for good. And come to find out in the series, her love is the slave master who bought her. And she's only going back in time and using her supernatural powers to rescue him.
Just him.
The white man. And I'm like, but your family, your cousins, I mean, you can rescue him and everybody else, but your focus is that.
Your friends.
A lot of us felt a certain kind of way when we saw it. And of course, it's badly dubbed. It's like,
it's called what again?
It's called Siempre Bruja or Always a Witch.
Yeah.
It's really, if you go to Netflix, it should be on the main header. Gorgeous actress who's playing in it.
Gorgeous.
But this is my fault.
It's a waste.
I take responsibility. It's my fault because usually when I see some stuff, I usually do my research first to see who's created it. What are their, you know, because I'm always curious. Oh, what are your passwords? Maybe there's something that, you know, this is coming out. Maybe I want to check out that something you already have out. Just kind of prep myself and come to find out that it's two white women who created this and they've had a problematic history of telling these type of stories.
Really?
So when we saw that, it was like, oops. And of course, some of the black people who are in the know, they're like, that's your fault because you know. And I took responsibility. I said, yes, right? You right? But I got, because we're so desperate to see ourselves.
Right.
Yeah.
And I saw you tweeting about it. Like, I remember
it was like one, not only was it a black woman, but it was like black Latino representation. Here's another aspect.
Never see Afro Latino representation.
Any from South America, any of that. So any Afro Latino representation, I was excited for. Right. And of course it's supernatural. Come on, why not?
Yeah, she's a witch.
She's a witch.
Here's the thing.
Like, and she's coming to the present. Like what kind of stories can you tell when you've been a slave and you wake up in 2019 and black people's walking
because
around.
And it also plays with the Octavia Butler who did
Kindred.
Yes,
Kindred.
So the reverse of that, like I'm a modern woman and I've been thrown back in slave times, and now
to rescue to rescue my slave master ancestor, and that's different than your boyfriend.
I thought this was going to be the you know, the opposite of Kindred right. by Octavia Butler. Right. What I got was, first of all, give it to me in Spanish. Dame lo en español. Okay, mm-hmm. That's what I wanted.
I want to hear I want to hear.
I didn't want it dubbed with these bad English actors. I didn't need that. I wanted the Spanish version only. Give me the English subtitles.
Right.
I did that.
Oh, was mm-hmm. it?
Yeah, I did. There's an option.
I couldn't get it to work last night.
Okay.
And I texted you. I was like, how do I get it to work?
My first thought, because by the time I saw that, it was like the next day, because I was drinking wine and live tweeting Saturday Night Sci-Fi. We were watching Ant-Man and the Wasp. So by the time I saw that, it was the next day. It's like, I missed this text from you. And that's when I said, I don't know. I just thought maybe they just did the dub version and didn't give you the language option.
I'll show you how to do it.
I just couldn't.
No, you just go under settings and language.
I wanted in Spanish. And shout out to Anwar, who had emailed the show a few weeks ago and hooked me up with some Spanish.
Yeah, he did some cool
tutorials
stuff.
And got me hooked on this. It's not a telenovela. It's an educational telenovela. Telenovela in Spanish, and I'm already like trying to binge this thing. Because Don Fernando's in his hacienda and he's about to die, and I think his kids are going to try to take his money. But I'm learning Spanish as it's going along, and I'm like, y'all better leave Don Fernando alone. Like, I'm getting so hot.
A good telenovela will get you hooked.
But again, they've done it in a way where I can learn Spanish.
Right.
So great.
Ooh, right.
So anyway, back to Siempre Bruja. The writing is so poor.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It seems to me like it was thrown together in 2 weeks. Mm. There was no development of this series whatsoever. Mm-hmm. There's a huge plot hole in terms of so she's burned, you know, spoiler alert, okay, if y'all want to, I made through halfway through this thing, and I turned it off. I literally could not take it. I was like, okay, enough. I'm gonna go watch the Fire doc on Hulu and be done with this.
There you go.
Okay, so there's a point where she's burned to the stake. She appears in 2019. And she's, you know, taken to the hospital because she passes out. And then the doctors are trying to ask her questions, and she's giving them weird answers. And the police come because apparently at the same time, there's a series of murders that have happened that involve people getting burned up. And so mm-hmm. could she have been one of those people, because she had burns on her?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the police never see her. She does some cool witchcraft, shuts the hospital down, lights down, before the backup generator can come on, because we all know a hospital mm-hmm. would have automatically had that, but whatever. Right. And she sneaks out of there. So mm-hmm. the cops never see her. The next scene I see of her in the future, she's along the seaboard, and there's a cop car of the two same guys that we saw in the hospital. Yeah. And they're like, there she is. I was like, well, they don't know what she looks like. They didn't see her.
Yeah, they saw her from far.
Making these leaps.
Right.
And also, I was bothered by the slave master that she's so in love with. I couldn't really get into it because it just sort of happens. Yeah. Like, he buys her and then they're in love. I'm like, well, wait a minute. How does that happen? Mm-hmm. Could you at least give me a little montage of them giving each other looks across the plantation?
Right.
She is a slave. So she has to earn the trust of her.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
There was no understanding of mm-hmm. that. Because I'm not gonna sit here and say that there was never any genuine love between master and slave. Right. I'm not gonna say that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that could have been something that happened, but mm-hmm.
you gotta develop that.
You gotta get me there.
Yeah. I think they just went on the fact that she is a slave, and the fact that he even like treats her well or gives her attention was like all that they needed. They were
that's not enough.
Yeah,
it's too fast. Like,
he's nice to her.
The next thing you saw was, you know, she's bought and she's like cleaning the place up, and then she's getting secret messages from him, like, meet me down by the river, by our usual spot in the Jardin, and there will be a fire. And so she's down there, or he's down there. First of all, he's not attractive.
What?
They did
and
not
that's
even,
disappointing.
Yeah.
Because I will buy, look,
listen,
because you know I will watch problematic stuff. Mm. But if you find, sometimes,
exactly.
If we're going to be real about it,
justify her big leap in like, oh yeah, let's do it because he's so gorgeous, I can get there.
But if we're going to be real about it.
He's a little Adam Driver looking kind of Darth Evil.
Does he even have a sexy voice? There's some things I've heard. If the voice can get me.
I got stuck with the dub version.
I'm so sorry.
And I was just like, oh, stop.
All right, voice. It's not like dreamy or dark or like seductive. It's just kind of like
what I needed was for the okay. So you, if you don't have the story time to really get me to under to where she's like captivate with him, then yeah. make it be something about him. Is he a good horseman? Is he a good swordsman? Is he a mm-hmm. good dancer? Is he a composer? Mm-hmm. What does he do in 17th century Cartagena that is attracting this woman?
And
to
maybe
him?
He's yeah, he could just be a simply compassionate person who, even though he comes from a slave master class,
he doesn't roll that way.
Yeah,
and it doesn't necessarily
that
have to be
too.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be an instant love. It could be a friendship, like, wow, I see this. Well, let me help you do this. Blah blah blah, and then it can be a slow, gradual. As part of the story of her being a witch in modern times and doing that. Yeah. Does she even in the first episode, like, even go to look up to see if her ancestors are still alive? That's the first thing I'm gonna do. Like, okay, it's
where's
like
mama at?
It's like, listen, the future.
She kind of just wandered.
Who's my people?
Right.
Where
she's
they
wandering around, and then there's this awful exposé scene. Screenwriters, don't do this stuff. Maybe watch Siempre Bruja as an example of what not to do, because there's a lot of that.
You can learn. You can learn from what not to do
in there. Yeah. Because there's this horrible exposé scene where they flash back to before she's burned on the stake as a witch, and she's imprisoned, right? Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. what happens when she goes down and meets the guy, and their little romantic encounter by the river and the fire and whatever. The mom comes, the slave master's mom comes. She busts it up.
Bitch.
She's like, "You bewitched my son. He could never be in love with you." And like, she gets hauled off. So then she's in jail.
Mm.
Oh, coincidentally, there's like a wizard in a cell next door, and he levitates her up.
Yeah.
And so they can see eye to eye, or they can make eye contact, whatever, through the prison, because apparently it's open up there. I don't know why.
I can't crawl up out the prison. Yeah. I mean,
why you floating me? Why you floating me?
Ain't nobody hitting the roof.
And you're a wizard. You can't make the bars. Like, what kind of wizardry are you doing?
Right. Why are you levitating up so y'all can have this communication? And so then it's this deal of like, you know, you're going to end up in the future and I need you to do something for me. And then if you do that, you will be returned to say in time to save your love, because old boy got shot. Okay, right. Old boy gets shot right before she gets burned at the stake, you know, or something like that. I can't remember. He ends up dying.
Yeah. His father kills him,
which was out of nowhere.
That was dumb.
I was like, what?
I was like, who's this man? He's like, I can't do this anymore. I'm like, bitch, it's not about you.
Okay, it's not about you.
Dead. It like made no sense. We've never seen the father before that.
Right.
Literally, a man walks up.
Again,
like,
watch this as what not to do.
Yeah.
Netflix acquiring things and thinking it's
it was already done.
I think it was a Colombian show, and I guess the way I feel like they probably picked it up. Oh, it sounds
they
a cool premise.
Spanish show,
hey, we so got they, and it's got a black woman, and black people come see it, and blah blah. And they didn't do their research, and then once they realized what they had, they had to like do that trailer to fool us and not tell us.
Were they going
to
get some data from me?
Yeah.
Hard stop at 30 minutes in and never returning to the street.
Yeah.
Hard
yeah.
stop.
Yeah.
There's some data for you.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things where we have to learn what we don't want to see. And it's one of the things that the horror noir documentary really brought up. It's like those tropes that are dead to us, but it seems that non-black filmmakers still use them thinking that they work. And in this time and age, we're going to pump the brakes, and you can't sit there and call it a distraction anymore, as your person said to you, like, oh, this green book stuff is just a distraction.
Distraction.
That's white people talk for Negroes. We don't want to hear what you say. We fucking don't get these awards.
That's exactly it.
This is our awards moment, and you're not going to fuck it up for
us. That's exactly it.
Let's be real. If we going to talk the talk.
So you had some questions.
So the question is, I'm going to start with the white people / non-black people. What are some things, some tips and tidbits we can give? And I'm talking about specifically the horror genre, because we were talking about the horror noir guacamole documentary that airs on Shudder TV February 7th. Make sure y'all check it out.
Really well done.
Really great. Yes. What are some tips we can give non-black filmmakers, white filmmakers and their ilk? Tropes and things that we don't ever want to see, never, ever, ever again in a horror film. Now, the Robin Means Coleman book, Horror Noir, gives two types of horror, black horror. Sure. There's blacks in horror, which are black people who are in horror films. Mm-hmm. And then there's black horror films, where it's a horror film, but the central mode and cultural milieu is blackness, is part of it, the nuance of it. Mm-hmm. So both types of films, what are some things that we better not see them do?
Well, you just said something interesting. I'm glad you set it up like that, because first of all, you said we're talking to white people. So that means we're going with the latter. We're not going with the black movie. We're going with the movie that they
most likely going.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So we have to focus on that one first before we open up the other one.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we have to think about what are the tropes that annoy us, first of all. You know what I mean?
Well, the doc talks about that. We already know the magical Negro.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The sacrificial Negro, mm-hmm. which Bird Box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you...
And I feel bad because Eric's my dude, but damn.
Hey, no, hey, listen, listen. This is all love. If we're going to talk about some stuff, we got to critique.
Yeah.
And if you're an actor or a performer who's in something, don't take it personal. Mm-hmm. You already got your check. You already made your little monies.
You got to work right next
you
to
Sandra
Bullock.
You got a credit. You're going to move on. You're going to be all right, boo-boo. Right. But the rest of us who are film critics, who are filmmakers, who are going to have to make stuff,
yeah,
we can't have sacrifice. You can sacrifice yourself as a black person. Right. It has to be an earned sacrifice. It can't be, oh my God, we're all in the grocery store, and oh, this coworker of mine, who I'm not even friends with, oh, I'm going to save you straight and throw myself. Bitch, I'm not throwing myself out. Exactly. I'm going to close the door. I'm going to try my ass to close the door. I'm not running. I would have kicked it or run it. Or can y'all help me? Can y'all help me?
Yeah. Shoot.
And if you got a cosmopolitan city and you have no black women in it, and you got a whole house full of people of all ever, and there's not one black woman, I'm not coming to see your movie. I'm not going to support it.
I'm also tired of when they do include a black woman, she's always doing the sassy neck rolling thing.
Yes.
Like, girl, don't go in there. You in danger, girl. No, oh, my Lord. No.
You're in danger.
Girl, he's fine.
Stop that. Yes, stop that. Stop it.
That was one of the things that I appreciated about Rachel True's performance in The Crab. Mm-hmm. She wasn't doing all that neck rolling nonsense.
Right.
She was just like, I'm another kid to school.
I'm just another kid to school. Yeah. I got to deal with
wearing
some bullshit.
Wearing this little, you know, knee-high skirt before Britney Spears had even thought about doing
right,
it.
Right.
Yeah. So,
right.
I was just thinking about, like, for example, and this isn't something that I don't want to see, but something that I want to see is like in Get Out, and they had the comedian who's the he played his friend, mm-hmm. who's mm-hmm. like the
Lil Ray.
Lil Ray. I would rather see more people like that in a movie. Like,
regular folk.
Like, yeah. Just quirky. Yeah,
trying to manage.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Trying to get by.
You
trying
know what?
To get through.
Just I got weird. My little busted car. Yeah. I'm trying to get to work. Right. And then shit happens.
And he has to use his own smarts.
Right.
You know, which he set up. He's a little weird. He thinks mm-hmm. he's like a fucking mall cop or whatever the hell. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right.
But he uses that later to win.
Right.
You know, he that ability he has. And to me, that was smart. Mm-hmm. That's the characters I want to see. I don't want to see Thug Number Two save the day. You know what I mean?
I love Thug Number Two.
I want to see that quirky dude. You know, that's more me. That's more of who we are. And it's like the same thing I was just thinking about what you were saying about the role in the next sister who we've seen since fucking Foxy Brown and all that shit. You know what I mean? It's where are we going today?
Right.
So when you talk about what we don't want to see is
I think what you're getting at is we want to see the nuances of
we can do both. What we don't want, what do we do want to see?
Right. Mm-hmm. We want to see the nuance. We talk about this all the time in here. We're not a monolithic culture.
Right.
Even in an Us trailer, it's great to see, you know, the dad was exposing the music or whatever, but then I kind of cringed up when the mom was like, get in rhythm. I was like, maybe the boy is rhythmless and we need to be okay with that and leave him alone.
And of course, our comments when we saw that trailer was that my first clue was something's wrong.
Yeah,
that already told me you ain't got no rhythm and you can't even on the beats and the ones and three. You just
listen.
That was my first
clue.
That's
out there.
I understand.
Black
who are rhythmically challenged.
Yes,
tons of them.
Listen, I
understand.
I I'll say I am. If unless there's a conductor standing in front of me with a baton, I will have trouble. That's just
and that's okay. No, and that would be cool to see those type of characters. Mm-hmm. But I have to admit, when I saw that in that trailer, I thought that was my first clue that something was wrong. Because usually little and young, like even, you know, I go,
wait a minute. How many 19, 20 times have you seen that trailer anyway? You know she watched it 40 times.
But what's fun about it, and this is what cracked me up, and I think this is just that backlash against Jordan Peele, people just being haters.
Oh.
You know, we were already having like watching it and trying to figure out clues and subtext, like, what do we think this means? And some people are like, y'all just making too much out of nothing. It's just blah, blah, blah. I'm like, can we not have fun?
That was a badass fucking trailer.
Can we not enjoy the trailer?
The music alone is like, it sticks in your brain afterwards.
Mm. Yeah. It just sticks, and it's, I don't know.
I guess what I'm getting at is like, I just want to see, you know, how would a character like Don Shirley be in a horror movie? We have this man pedigreed as hell, speaks five different languages, right. Russian, you know, German, you know, but how would he react to the monster in the room? Mm-hmm. Have we seen that?
No, we have never seen that. Mm. Not that I know you would know, but I've never seen that.
I mean, you have, we talked about in the documentary, talked about quite a bit because I found it really fresh. Is it Evil Dead? What's the one with the black dude with the zombies?
The Dawn of the Dead? The very first one?
Yeah.
Night of the Living
Dead? Night of the Living Dead.
1968, yeah.
Yes.
That's still my favorite.
I watched that movie and I'm like, oh, the black dude's in the house. And he's just, and we don't make an issue of him being black. He's just there. He's like every man who's there. And he's like, hey, we shouldn't be, you know, down in the basement. I think, I can't remember, they were arguing about whether we'd be in the basement, we'd be upstairs, whatever. He had a point of view. He had agency. And the, and he wasn't just kowtowing down to the white people like, well, what do you guys think?
And he beat the white dude up.
Oh, yeah.
1968.
Right.
When they were battling for Lee and he and Pimp Slap and hit him. Pimp and we were just like,
shit out of that dude. I was like,
what?
Let me rewind that back again.
What?
I go, what? That should be a meme.
Okay. Like, what? 1968?
He was the best actor for the part. It was not cat. It was
he should
not
be a superstar.
It's not supposed to be a black actor. Mm-hmm. It was just like, just bring his actors. He came in, he nailed the audition.
But that brings me to an important point, which is this. A lot of times when people who are not black who are making these horror films and they cast black people and they say things like, we're the best actor, which is great because we got some fantastic black actors. One of the things I think they need to really be careful of is not what their intent was, but what the impact is going to be. Mm-hmm. So, for example, in Night of the Living Dead, you know, it wasn't until years later that George Romero was like, yeah, you know, when he was like the best actor, which he was. Mm-hmm. But when you're dealing with blackness and America, you really have to be very careful to see what some of the nuances are. And a lot of times people miss nuance because they totally miss the fact that 1968, the murder of Dr. King, a whole bunch of stuff was going on, and how to have him die at the end, even though it could have been a white guy in
but
that
remember,
Lee
they shot it a year before.
Oh, God, yeah, yeah. You know? But I'm just saying it's like the impact of it. So, for example, I'll just use Bird Box as an example. Yeah. You see Black people talking about how we're always the first one to be killed in movies. You see all kinds of stuff. Don't let us do dumb stuff.
Right.
And if you have black characters, and you know that black people love horror, and you got two... Don't do stupid stuff that black people would not normally do.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. You can't have
because
us doing
what he did, we would not have done.
We would not have done.
No.
You know, and you got to think in terms of the whole, if you don't know horror history, and this is why it's so important you watch this documentary and that you get the book and read it, you need to understand how black people's place in horror films have always been problematic. Study that so that you don't make those same mistakes. Because black people, we come to see a horror movie, we'll do it two or three times, we'll talk about it. And if it's bad, we start doing memes like the Bird Box Challenge when they had the people walking around, they had black people walking around buying and stuff and doing and clowning it. And here's the thing, even though black people were clowning the movie and they were watching it, some enjoyed it and some were like, man, we wouldn't do that.
So many downloads.
We made people go watch it. It became
a hit.
Yeah. Because we clowned it.
And you kept talking about it
and
on Twitter.
Right. And you owe us some free subscriptions for talking about it and pumping
it up.
No,
they just raised your rates.
They just raised our rates.
Exactly.
But it's true. It was just frustrating. And somebody put a meme that cracked me up. And he says, black women trying to be in Bird Box. And it was a photo of some black celebrity guy with a white woman. And then has somebody, black woman in the background, who was photo bombing the photo. And they said, that was like us trying to be in Bird Box. And it was like, it's so true. It'd be different if you were in some like little small suburban area where there really isn't a large population of black people. I can roll with that. I watch a lot of horror movies. There's some areas that are just scary in New England and places where I know black people really ain't gonna be there. Mm-hmm. So if you have a movie set in that, I'm not gonna be going like, oh my God, you need to have black people there.
And don't have the token black.
And don't have the token
just to have
the token black who's not connected.
Because
we talk about this all the time. The token black person who's not connected to their own community.
Right, yes. Right.
And that they're only, please don't do, and we talk about this, and that they talk about in the book, and we call him Scatman Crothers. We call him the patron saint of black death.
Oh,
so
Shining.
Shout out to Mark Harris for The Shining, where it's like, after that, every black character was kind of like that. And it kills me. And even though we read it in the book, and it cracks me up, because you got to think about it. Scatman Crothers, don't do this to any of your black characters.
Mm-hmm.
Had a comfortable house. He'd been living for a long, living a good life. Meets this white boy. Meets this white boy for 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Feels the need to get on a plane, fly out to rent in a blizzard, a scooter, go through a blizzard, and he's got the shining skill. Mm-hmm. And they say it in the documentary. And you, nigga, you got the shining skill, and you can see what happens in the future. And you didn't see that axe,
right?
When you stepped, didn't even get the brother a chance to get in the door and shake the snow off his boots when he got in the house. Stepped in and you know, got chopped up. Right. And it was shocking. And he became known for a lot of black people as like the patron saint of black death, because that's the sacrificial Negro. If you want to see what a sacrificial Negro is,
watch The Shining.
Watch The Shining and see all the stuff he went through. Don't even know this family. It'd be different if he raised his boy or know their family for years, that kind of thing. I just met you 10 minutes on a tour. Y'all, good luck, blah, blah, blah. And you got supernatural powers to see the future. I will never forgive Stanley Kubrick for that, because in the book, he didn't die.
No. And that was discussed in the documentary as well.
And the book to have you change that on purpose to have him means that you understand there's a thing that white people need to see, which is black people being self-serving and at the sacrificing themselves to ensure that whiteness survives at the expense of. Now, you know, he had a family back there. And, you know, if this was a black person's version of it, there would have been his wife sitting there going, what you talking about? You going to get on the plane and fly out there. We got to go down here. We going to see the play down here with the nananam in the church. And we got to come down there because so-and-so is sick. They shut in. We got stuff to do. What you mean you going to run up there to the Overlook Hotel?
Where the hell is that?
And where that?
Colorado.
Come on. You know, who does that?
It's a storm out there. What are you talking about?
You can't do that. You
where
can't.
The hell are you going?
You can't do that anymore with black characters.
You know you can't drive in the way.
Then figure it out.
But what do we do want to see? You said we want to see some regular black folks. You know,
I want to see. That's why I use the word quirky. And I mean, just imagine if Lil Rel's character was somebody different. It would not have had the impact it did. It would not have given him a TV show when it was over. You know what I mean? It needed somebody that everybody could relate to, laugh at, enjoy, feel like you like, feel like you know him. It needed that.
There's this thing called the everyman, right? And I find that this term gets often applied to white actors, but it doesn't get applied to black actors. Because a lot of times when blacks do appear in the cinema, it's, we have to be so flawless and noble and save the day. And, you know, and we're just not as layered and complicated and nuanced as we should be. We act like really human beings. We're just sort of like, well, we can't show them as criminals. So let's make them like these perfect, you know, angels, you know, let's make them Obama-esque, if you will. I can make that sort of analogy. And what I want to see is the gray. I'm looking at gray. People I interact on a daily basis who are people of color, they're in this gray space.
I don't watch a lot of horror. I'm actually not a huge, because I get scared very easily.
Scary cat.
So
you're not alone, brother. I almost walked out of Scream at the Dollar Theater.
Listen, Scream?
The Dollar Theater. I had to turn to my friend Kathy Moore. The first 8 minutes of that movie where he's called, the phone calls, the popcorn's burning, he's in the back, now he's at the front, where he's all over, now I just saw the white mask go across the screen. I turned to my friend Kathy Moore and I said, Kathy. Kathy, it's too scary. I gotta leave. She looked at me like, are you the most punk bitch ever?
Damn. What were you saying, Giuseppe?
No, I that's how I am. I'm still scared to go into a bathroom stall to this day. Like when I was a kid, my mom used to make my brother go with me every time I went to the bathroom because I always thought he was in the stall, one of the stalls.
The Candyman?
Yeah. No. Scream, when Sydney was in the stall.
See? Scream was powerful.
This is why, and you and I have had like 5 or 10 conversations about this on the air. This is why parents need to teach their kids to watch horror movies.
I'm telling you.
This is exactly why.
So it I can't go to the bathroom?
No.
Hold on.
No, it
let's
teaches
give, you. Let's give him the education.
No.
Give me the education.
Horror will save your life. Horror lets you, it teaches you to trust your gut. It teaches you to discern who are really good people and really bad people, even when the so-called good people who are bad, who smile on your face, and you should be able to read between the lines and discern who
human
really
behavior.
Is for you. Human behavior. It teaches you to look around and not be so Pollyanna-ish.
Right.
And it teaches you also to just be aware that you need to be able to have some skills that help get you out of a situation on your own and not expect someone to save you.
Maybe not throw on your feet.
I'm bad at all of that.
I was using this. I don't remember that much of my childhood, but I have a couple memories. One of them is, you remember the big vans he was having in the 70s?
We
had one of them big vans with the big windows and everybody would be sitting out looking. We had one of those big vans, right? They were dangerous.
Yeah.
And I was sitting in my mom's lap. We were at the movie drive-in theater. There were a thing called drive-in back in the day.
They were awesome.
I didn't want to drive in.
They still have a few sporadically around here.
We were at the drive-in theater. I must have been 4. I think we were watching, I want to say we were watching probably Not a Living Dead. It was one of those type of things. And it was not a Living Dead, or it was like one of those really, really scary blaxploitation movies. And we were sitting there watching the movie, and my mom turned over and saw one of her friends walk by, right? So they start yipping and yabbing, and she realizes I'm sitting in my mom's seat, in my mom's lap. She's like, "You got your son sitting here?" I still remember the conversation. And my mom said, and she looked at my husband, she says, "My kids," and she pointed in the back, and all of us, we were all sitting there watching. She's like, "All my kids watch horror. It teaches them not to be scared about some
and not to
bullshit.
Be stupid.
Yeah. Right.
Don't be stupid."
I remember,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, going back to the drive-in, I remember seeing Jaws at the drive-in.
Jaws at the drive-in, yeah. All that.
I was like, and so was it, the shark, it was bad enough, but there were also these shock things where bodies were popping out when he goes underneath the dig. And then the other thing that transformed horror for me as a kid was the VHS. Because we were like the first family on the block that had a VCR. And then my sister was a huge horror nut. So we watched all that stuff, the Friday 13th, like all that. But also the stuff like Happy Birthday to Me.
Oh God, yeah.
My Bloody Valentine. I mean, she was watching stuff, and it was all just white. It was all just white girls running around, and they couldn't make sense of it all. Like, really,
all the Final Girl movies, right?
Exactly. And they were all just like Becky and Sue, and like, what's going on? And it's like, he's about to shove a spike through your head. Okay,
that's what I'm about to die.
Yeah.
But just to piggyback off of what Lisa is saying is, I remember we taught a class at OBS a couple of years ago, and we were talking about horror, and I remember talking about how you have to, what we don't have anymore now, because nobody watches DVDs anymore, we used to have DVDs and VHS, right? So you rent something at Blockbuster or Redbox or whatever, and you could watch the behind the scenes.
Right.
So I would tell them, I would like, watch the movie and then watch the behind the scenes. And then you see the guy sitting there in the makeup chair getting his zombie makeup on, and it numbs you to all that shit. And so, for example, and I said also, piggybacking off what Lisa said, it teaches you about behavior. It teaches you about, if I'm ever like walking in a city block and it's dark and it's creepy and I feel like somebody's walking behind
me. Somebody probably is.
It teaches you all those instincts. So now you're looking around going, okay, I see a brick over there. I see that. I see, you know what I mean? I see the top
situational
of a
awareness.
Trash can.
It's called situational awareness.
Exactly. That's what it teaches you.
And I had to do that on Friday when I left the Horror Noir, because when Linnell and Jeff and I were walking out, it was like 12 midnight. It was raining. So we were walking and it was Hollywood.
Hollywood Boulevard.
But it was like wet.
That crazy shit.
So you hear the little scuttling everywhere, people are running around, it's like shiny lights
because the rain is the rain is like acid for people here.
Yes,
in LA.
And it's like and so literally we dropped, you know, she went down, and then I was heading to Hollywood and Highland to go get my car because I had parked inside the parking structure. And so Jeff had called an Uber, and he's like, okay, there, we're good. And so Jeff had left. So what I did was I walked, and as soon as the two of you left, you know, all those other people that were there when we were, everybody disappeared. So literally, I'm a Hollywood and orange.
Hilarious.
It's raining. You know, I'm sitting here with my little journal, my little shop.
And the lights for everything are still going.
The lights are going. Things are shiny, but there are no people.
Yeah, right.
And then I can see the I can see the fog kind of coming down. So I was in a heart. But here's the thing. Because I grew up with horror, and I know shit can go bad real quick. When I walked around the corner orange to go get my car, the garage was locked.
What?
And I was like,
at 1 a.m.?
But I, watch.
It wasn't even 1 a.m.
There were there were homeless people in the thing. So for a minute there, I was really on the set of that 1980s movie, which is the one where, what was it called? It's the Cannibalistic Human Chud.
Chud,
the cannibalistic humanoid underground dwellers.
Right.
So the people they looked like the Chud people because they were all huddled, and then, you know, and it's sad though because like the rain and they're shivering. But every now and then you see like this little, like strong little rags of thing, and they would move a little bit because there was somebody there.
Yeah.
But your girl was not tripping because, number one, even though I have my shawl around me, I know situational things that happen. I could quickly take that off, wrap around somebody's neck and strangle them.
Yes.
I had my car keys jabbed in my hand.
Yeah.
And I had my foot ready to do the whole boom and boom thing. Horror movie. So when I got there, everything's locked and there's nobody and all there's a sign and there's really no phone number to call. And I'm like, well, shit. So is my car locked in here? Well, the Rosevaught Hotel is a block over. Somebody I know from Shudder TV is probably over there, can just let me hang out, or I can just hang. No big deal. I'll figure it out. So then I heard footsteps. So mind you, this is like horror movie. Like I was in a horror movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the distance, I hear the echo of footsteps. I'm like, well, hopefully that's security. I looked. I see a shadowy figure. No, it's not security. Some random person. So boop, 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 boop. I'm like, all right, keep your eye out. This might be somebody who wants to try to do an old run over on you. Mm-hmm. But they don't know I'm a master of horror. I will fuck you up. I will become Candyman, okay? Right. I might hook you. So luckily, I just said, okay, well, let me just walk through here. And luckily for me, what had happened was in the Hollywood Highland, they just shut down the one half because they want to control people coming in and out. So the other side is open. So when I walked in there, I walked through and it was like, no people, no people. And literally, I start to panic after that, like a slow panic, not a scary, like, oh my God, white girl panic. Yeah. It was more like a sister girl, like, girl, where is everybody? This is, okay, this is changing up. Well, my cell phone is powered up. Right. I can get a hotel. I can, it's not a big deal. Mm. And luckily, I saw a sister, it was like Lil Rel. But the black woman, I said, hey, sister, can I get my car? Like, what's the situation? She says, oh, girl, you know, and literally she's like, Lil Rel, comfortable. Mm. Like, oh, girl, you know what? They locked that side because, you know, they got the people to go in the club over here. So we got to control who's coming in and out. Mm. So you have to go in the other way and you're good. You just come out on the other side on Highland instead of Orange. I'm like, okay, good. Mm. And so literally I'm walking and I see people and it was like the end of the horror movie when you've been through it.
Sudden, yeah.
Yeah.
It returns to normalcy. Yeah. And then there were more people who were coming from the club.
It's also adrenaline. Trying. Your adrenaline kicked in.
And it kicked in once I went in and I realized, oh shit, there really is nobody. I'm hearing things like, I'm gonna really have to fuck somebody up. I'm gonna be on the 1 o'clock news. Jesus. Coming from horror noir, Lisa Bolakaja, who had just finished a thing, kill somebody on the side. Wait, and they had the camera pan, and I'm the one that got my teeth in the person's neck, hilarious. Ripping out their throat. What?
Oh, Jesus.
With her dreads, you have
dreads everywhere. What was she doing? No, he came after me, and I had to mess him up. But I'd be the one going to jail at the end of the movie, like, no. But they came for me and I was surviving myself. I would have been the ending of that Get Out would have been as opposed to what they gave it.
Oh, that was talked about though. Yes. There was different versions was different of the ending.
Yeah. He was going to go to jail.
He was going to go to jail. Mm.
And that would have been crushing for us.
Yeah.
Totally.
I don't think it would have done as well as a movie.
Now, how does it feel when you saw the documentary? Because one of the critiques that you had of Get Out, I think it was you or Jeff, one of you, or maybe both of you, who just said that because there were no good white people. Or maybe that was Jeff who said that.
I didn't
that
say
the
that.
One thing that they disliked, and I know there's some other black people said it to me, so I maybe just be glomming it on to people who were just like, oh, well, and this is black people, which is...
Because we're so used to seeing it.
They're so used to seeing it. Like, what? We're always... It was kind of like some people are like, there are no good white people in Get Out. And Jordan Peele says it. He says, there are no good white people. Intentionally.
Everything, it was intentional.
Intentional. Yeah.
Right.
You know, how did you feel when you heard that? Like, I was sitting here, I was like, wow,
no, it was really good. What I found great about the documentary was to get inside Jordan Peele's head for a second.
Right.
Because I came out of Get Out and I was kind of like... What?
Yeah, like I needed to see it again.
I just had some questions. Mm-hmm. And there was stuff where I was like, well, how does Lil Rel figure out where he is? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, just stuff like, there was a couple little gaps.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was fascinating. But I'm glad the doc didn't spend all, they could spend 90 minutes on just talking to Jordan Peele. But they gave him the right amount of time talking about Get Out, the two different endings, get inside his head a little bit. I mean, I never picked up on the cotton thing that he was picking from the chair.
Yep.
Or the buck.
The buck,
buck that he's...
Those are things those that jumped things, out to me, yeah.
Yeah, right over my head. Because, again, my black experience is a little different.
A little different,
like,
yeah.
I'm a suburban girl from Long Island, like... You know,
For me, the only reason I caught up for it because, you know, going to college, that's the stuff I studied. My major was social science. My minor was Native American studies and black history. So those type of imagery, those type of things jump out at me automatically in film. So when I saw the cotton, when I saw the buck, I was seeing some nuanced layering things. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, that's the type of stuff that's jumping out at me. And I admitted this freely. And I think I told you the first time I saw Get Out, when I saw it with my mom, when they killed the white girl at the end, I jumped up and screamed and applauded. And it wasn't because I was trying to be mean. And when it happened, it was like an out-of-body experience. Mm-hmm. Because when I sat back down, I was like, oh, damn, did I really just to see the death of a woman and just seeing that? Right, and I thought, what is that about? And I'm like... No, because we always be the ones who die. Yeah, and in real life, he would have been dead. And for once, it was like that OJ moment.
Yeah, I think it was for most black people.
Yeah, it was
all
like,
these terrible things have always happened to us. And even though this is probably not a great idea for him to kill somebody, but it was like, we've always got that.
Well, then, it also tells you that it was earned in the script. Because
exactly.
She does some serious fuckery.
Yes.
And she kept trying to use her her sexiness or whatever it
her
is.
Her femininity.
Yeah.
To and get her him. Whiteness.
And she
also
brought it
that
again
has
at
been
the
used
end.
Historically
she,
to destroy
she tried to
black
play
people.
Him again and he was smart yes. enough not to see
nah.
it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think one of the really great nuanced things about Get Out that I think made a lot of white people uncomfortable mm-hmm. is the racism of liberal white people.
Oh, God.
A lot of people always want to say it's conservative right. white people who are the most evil. And less, sometimes, in my experience, sometimes the conservative white people, mm-hmm. sometimes they're less racist than right. the liberal ones. Because yeah. the liberal ones have the audacity to think that they know it all.
Right.
And they don't check their own unconscious, unbiased racism. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, just like in the movie, oh, you know, if I could vote for Obama, I can vote for him 3 times. And they're right. smiling, chuck, chuck, chuck. And, you know, and they're snowballing you to make you see something. And they razzle-dazzle you and you miss out on the stuff. Right. So when the white girl at the end... You know, my first clue was like when the bitch had pictures.
Right.
of all and done. Brother didn't leave then.
I saw that.
And brother
understand.
Didn't leave then.
That's why I didn't understand.
And you're looking at a picture that's the maid. Like, that's the heifer, that's the maid. And you didn't leave?
You should have been out. Not messing up. Yeah. Let me get the keys. Don't mess with her about
at that,
keys.
At that
Go.
Moment, at that moment, there were only two options for me. That yeah. brother got to die. Mm-hmm. Just on that, mm-hmm. on that principle alone, that you saw this and you didn't move, mm-hmm. you know, or he's going to have to kill everybody in the house for his late wake-up call. Yeah. And so it was like, it's just certain things that I'm just really curious would have been different if it hadn't been Jordan Peele.
But let me just say something about Get Out, because I saw it in the Midwest mm-hmm. with a predominantly white audience. Mm. And this was several weeks after it had been out. It had been out for like a month. Mm. And I went on Tuesday night. Now, to mind you, Tuesday night at the multiplex in Southern Illinois mm-hmm. is $5 night. Mm-hmm. So they always get a good crowd. But right. I wasn't expecting Get Out to be still pulling a sold out crowd after it's been out for 6 weeks. And mm. it was packed mm-hmm. with white millennials who were just like, I don't know what the experience was. Maybe they were seeing it for the first time. Maybe they seen it for the second time. I don't know. But they were definitely interested in seeing this movie for whatever reason. I can't explain it. But they were there. So.
And it started a lot of conversations. And we got to give...
What I didn't harp on is that's conservative country. Mm-hmm. Very conservative country. Mm-hmm. Like, they mm-hmm. don't... They're not in the, you know... Well, you know their agenda. We know their agenda. Mm-hmm. It's been very clear. But I wouldn't surprise me if some of those kids were...
Is the Bible Belt there?
Oh, absolutely. Completely. Mm-hmm. Super Christian. Mm-hmm. Super, you know, anti-abortion. Right. Not all of them, but mm-hmm. it's that type of mentality. Majority. It's very conservative. Fox mm-hmm. News watching, oh. loving, Breitbart, yeah. you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So, but their kids... are being exposed to, I think what's good about Get Out is mm-hmm. the kids are being exposed to something else, right. something
right.
different.
Right.
And I think they're eager to see something different other mm-hmm. than what's in their own households.
Absolutely.
So they go out to the movies right. and watch something made by a black man. They're like, oh, we don't know what this is, but it's like some sort of, they love horror, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Horror and faith-based films are going to make you some
and
money.
Hip-hop.
Yeah.
Make you some money. I'm talking about in the middle of the country, the flyover states of the
right.
This is going to make you some money.
That's going to make you some money.
I see some trailers when I'm there going to the cinema for these faith-based movies and I'm like, and they get some actors from like This Is Us. There's Chrissy Metz mm-hmm. is her name?
Mm-hmm.
She's in a faith-based movie.
I just saw the trailer for that movie too.
Yeah.
Where and her I'm son like, is in a coma. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're doing it and they're making money.
They're mm-hmm. making their money.
Yeah.
You know?
They don't need Hollywood.
They don't need Hollywood. They can do it and self-publish. Right. Well, the great thing about Get Out is it's like in a long time, it's the first black person winning an Oscar for writing an original screenplay. Right. Not only that for a black person, but a horror screenplay.
An original
horror screenplay winning that. So I was thrilled just from both counts.
Yeah.
For black, but for horror, because for me, horror doesn't get the respect it deserves.
It's hard to elevate it because we've seen so many different types of
I'm still
of horror.
Pissy that Toni Collette for Hereditary is not getting any nods at all. And by the way, Hereditary is on Amazon Prime right now. If you haven't got a chance to see it, please watch it. And her performance in that, because it's not just horror, mm-hmm. it's drama. Yeah. She's doing a lot in that movie. And I just feel like because they think of it as just a redhead stepchild in the basement.
Kind of like they thought of comic book movies.
Yes.
You know, and so
until Black Panther blew it up.
It gets a Best Picture nom.
Right. And I mentioned that in the thing at the screening of the, you know, horror noir documentary in the panel was basically there's no excuse now for you to say that these films that we make are not going to make you money and not going to be critically acclaimed. Moonlight showed you that a black indie art house film
mm-hmm.
can win you an Oscar and make your money back. Right. Black Panther, superheroes. Yeah. Get Out, horror movie. Yeah. So I think the door is open for us and it's just that we need to just have more writers tell some different stories.
I don't know if you guys saw my article that they just
I did tell you that.
And because I talk about this thing about like where we are now and mm-hmm. like how things have changed, and I've talked about how movies like Moonlight and Black Panther have opened the doors for all of us. Mm-hmm. Now we all are and seeing.
Even, sorry to bother you. Right? Yes. Sure, if you're sure, doing sure. that sort of art house, yeah. art, that yeah. sort of space,
yeah, Black Klansman, all that.
Right.
But we're starting to see our friends in the credits now.
Right.
Mm. We're starting to see them, mm-hmm. and now I was just talking to some people the other day. Black women are starting to be the rise on the showrunners thing. Like they're mm-hmm. starting to, mm-hmm. it's starting to become a quite a few of them now, even more than men. You know what I mean? So which is a good thing. We're just heading in a new direction, which I think is amazing.
And one of the things that people need to realize about Black women, and we've done this historically, is that when we get in, we bring people with us, not necessarily just Black people. We'll bring every other person with us that has supported us. We'll bring in white women. We'll bring in anybody who's there
like
for
what's
us.
What's going on at Queen Sugar? It's yeah. like all those directors of the episodes are all female, but they're not all Black females.
Right.
So bringing
right.
in a cornucopia.
Right. Of, giving them skills, mentorship, mm-hmm. and yeah. all that. And we
because
see
they can get it, if they can get it done, they can get it done.
Right.
You're trying to keep the train of the TV show running. That's right. the whole point. That right. You've got to move. Right. Honestly, can't mm-hmm. get behind.
Because I was sitting there looking at the Directors Guild, and I'm just trying to think, not a lot of women.
Nope.
Winning stuff.
It's bad.
But I heard that Sundance, a lot of the critically acclaimed things that are coming out of the Sundance mm-hmm. darlings are women.
Yep.
Who are making things.
Did you have another question?
No, I was just going to wrap it up in a little bit, but go ahead.
I'm ready.
I was just going to say, the thing about horror is, I feel like we do have horror screenplay competition, but where are the horror fellowships?
Yeah.
Where's the thing where you can get a fellowship specifically trying to do horror?
Right.
And be, like, I think Jordan Peele's company has one.
Mm-hmm. Do they?
Monkey Paw. Productions.
They have something.
They're actually looking for scripts. They're looking for scripts.
You can submit scripts.
Right.
I'm talking about how can you say if you want to work in this genre as a writer, director, or possibly some combination of the two? How can you like elevate your craft in terms of being around, like being at Blumhouse, which mm-hmm. cranks out a lot of horror movies?
I think we need to have like a George Romero Fellowship or something. Wes Craven, George Romero Fellowship,
right?
Where we have some horror. Maybe we need to talk and put it together ourselves. Mm-hmm. And basically, we need to have something that's a fellowship that's just specifically for horror, but not just, you know, one type of horror. Where mm-hmm. you know, it'd be slasher, it would be found footage, it'd be all the different types, cultural horror, yeah. all of that stuff. Something that helps to, because you know, Sundance has all those different fellowships and things for different mm-hmm. types of stories. We really need one for horror, because I think, you know, in my heart, horror has always been my first love. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like we never get the respect that we deserve. And I feel like it's because
that's
people
how you help elevate it too.
And I think right. that's because people say it's just B-movie trash. And yeah, there's a lot of horror trash out there, but there's just things that are just amazing and wonderful. And I think we just got to just create it ourselves.
Agreed.
What's great, I mean, because people are able to do it on a smaller budget. So if you do have like the iPhone,
you're going to get your money back. Trust me.
So to speak. Yep. And you can do a horror film with the iPhone and just make sure the sound is good. But you just need some mentorship.
Important.
You just need some people to say, all right, you know, here's how you set it up. Here's mm-hmm. how you can how do you distribute it? How
right.
do you get it so people
right.
can see
right.
it?
Well, you know, John Carpenter and all those dudes are still around. So maybe we need to start talking to them and say we would like to create a horror fellowship.
Stephen King
and create something for filmmakers that not just film, but TV also yep. to help mentor and maybe have something, maybe 15, you know, fellows, mm-hmm. they come somewhere and we have those
shadow
them and we start doing the horror stuff to bring it and make sure that it's not just men, there's women, there's people of color, there's non-binary, everybody who wants to do horror,
yeah, I think it's a good idea.
So that's our new 2019 goal for that. So two things.
Yeah.
Please remember on February 17th, if you have Shudder streaming, to check out the documentary.
Or is it February 7th?
February 7th, sorry. February 7th on Shudder TV. Horror noir.
Yeah.
Please check it out. And here's the thing. For those of you who don't have it.
It's coming out
right,
tomorrow.
Yeah. Right now. What's the date today?
The 3rd.
Okay. So here's the thing. Right now as we speak, Shudder TV is offering a week free. So you can just sign up real quick. Watch the documentary.
Is it not in your regular cable? Shudder TV?
It's streaming.
It's streaming.
You're thinking of Chiller.
Yeah.
Chiller's TV.
So Shudder TV is streaming, and they are offering right now, like I said, the free 1 week, you know, you can trial basis and stuff like that. They have a lot of great stuff on there. So, you know, try it out, see it. It's not that expensive, but right now you can get it free. So if you want to go see Horror Noir, check it out. Also, check out the book by Robin Means Coleman, with the documentary is based on, which is Horror Noir. I think it's called Horror Noir, and I think the subtitle is like A History of Blacks in Horror or something like that. Mm-hmm. And check it out. And And thank you to all the people who came out to
fantastic
the Egyptian
turnout.
Tell us where you at when you're done.
I am Lisa Bolivaja. I am at What Fresh Hell Is This on Twitter. You can find me a lot of times tweeting under the Saturday Night Sci-Fi hashtag. And whenever Ashley Blackwell, hey Ashley, Graveyard Sisters, Graveyard Shift Sisters, Friday Night Horror.
Mm-hmm. That's what's that.
Oh, and before we forget, mm-hmm, hey, lots of love and blessing and a lot of healing towards Jussie Smollett, who got attacked recently. Mm-hmm. So, brother, we got you back. We know you're a talented person.
The nicest
person.
Guy in Hollywood.
Yeah, mm-hmm, one of the sweetest, nicest people. You know? And for to hear that, that was mm-hmm really disheartening. And I hope mm-hmm they get those people that did that. Mm-hmm. And that's not acceptable. And, hey, much healing and love to you and your family.
And I just want to say, it's funny because my husband and I, we've been together for 17 and a half years. We hardly ever, like, hold hands anywhere. Mm. When we go to the movies or we go to, like, the theater, we have our Pantages Theater, we'll hold hands, like, walking through the aisle or whatever. Mm-hmm. As soon as we get outside, I'm, like, nervous. Mm. Yeah. And mainly it's because I'm the type of dude, and, you know, just where we're from, people be looking at me saying shit. I'm like, what, you got a fucking problem?
Yeah.
I'm that dude.
Right.
Yeah.
So I always be like, I'd rather just not even do this, but I drive down the street and I see the young millennial kids.
They're doing it.
They're doing it.
And I just like, I just love these kids. Like, they're just so mm-hmm bold, but I worry for them.
For them.
You know what I mean?
You can do that in LA.
Right. Yeah.
You can't do that in every city in the country.
Right.
I'm not shocked that this happened in Chicago.
No, not at all.
Because Chicago, people forget, even though it's an eclectic, diverse city, it is surrounded by small town white America, right, all around.
It's still very
and
racist.
And they claim right Chicago as their city. It right belongs to them. Mm-hmm. Like they mm built it or
right
whatever.
Right.
So all you others need to get out.
Right.
So, so when people were like, oh, man, how could this happen in Chicago? I was like, it could happen anywhere, anytime. Good.
Anywhere.
We had some Proud Boys over in Atwater Village here mm-hmm in LA. So
yep,
it's happening
that
everywhere.
Yeah. 34th Street, New York.
Yeah.
So
it's like it happens in New York, San Francisco.
Yeah, 34th Street.
Transgender people
always.
Ever feels empowered. You know, we had the bullshit happen at the Washington Monument with the Native American man getting mm-hmm smirked at by the white kid from mm-hmm Covington Catholic. I mean, this is a pervasive mentality. Our country's sick right now. Right. It's sick mentally. It's also sick physically. We got freaking polar vortex happening.
Yeah.
We have flooding here in LA. Mm-hmm. It's like we're in a time right now. I feel like the whole country is just...
There is no global warming, though. You know that, right?
Please. Yeah. And as our president said, we actually need it because Chicago is cold.
The whole country is unwell. Unwell.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, you can find me on Twitter at
Transition Man.
On Twitter at Lynelle LYNELLEWHITE.
That was that. Where you at, Jasani Drew?
I am on Twitter as Jasani Drew, JESANIDREW. But I'm on also Instagram as Visionary Aligned Man. Said that weird.
All right.
And I'm your host, Hilliard Guest. You guys can find me on Twitter at Hilliard Guest. You guys can follow the show, Screenwriters RR, on Twitter. Any questions, screenwritersrantroom@gmail.com. Please go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review. We need that for the metrics. Go on our new Patreon page. That's doing all right, too. We're getting better. It's getting good. We appreciate all you guys. Anwar, is that who it was?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Anwar.
Big shout out to Anwar.
Gracias por su ayuda.
Yeah, Simon. He sent us a big, you know, check the other day. I was like, oh, that was nice.
Nice. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Let me think. Big shout out to everybody on Deadly Class. Show's doing good. We'll talk about it next. And then, what else? God, so much shit going on. I can't decide what I want to talk about. Anyway, that's it. I'll leave it right there. Follow us on Facebook. And we'll see Chris in a few weeks. Cool. Shout out to Chris. So y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. On the show, we keep it real. We keep it opinionated. We keep it what, everybody?
2019.
Peace, y'all.
Ciao.
I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Rant Room. You wanna be a rider? Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears.
worries are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the rent room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want. Welcome to the Red Room.